We are up to Parakeet Beis, chapter 12. Tonight is the, what is it, 21st? 23rd.
Excuse me,
who's going to be outside? 21st. Okay, tonight's the 21st of November. And, right, chapter 12, Parakeet Beis. Vayihi dvar Hashem Eli Leimor, and the word of Hashem was to me saying, Ben Adam, Besoch, what we're going to watch for over here is, let's pick out the theme, or the, let's pick out that which Yechezkel seems to be emphasizing in these first few psukim. Ben Adam, son of man, Besoch Beis Hameri Atal Yoshev, amongst the house of rebellion you are dwelling, Asher Einayim Lohem Liros, they have eyes to see, V'lo Ro, but they have not seen. Aznayim Lohem Lishmoa, they have ears to hear, V'lo Shameu, and they don't hear. Kibes Merihem, for they are a house of rebellion. V'atav en Adam, and you son of man, Aseh Lecha Klei Gola, make for yourself utensils of exile. Uglei Omam Le'inehem, and exile, you should be exiled during the day, or actually Rashi says this means for some days, to their eyes. V'galisa mimekomcha, and you shall be exiled from your place, al makom acher, to another place, le'inehem, to their eyes. Ula yiru, maybe they will see, ki beis merihema, for they are a house of rebellion. V'otesach ilecha, and you will take out your utensils, kichle gola, like the utensils of exile, yomam, for days, le'inehem, to their eyes. You will go out at night to their eyes, like those who go out into exile. To their eyes, dig for yourself in the wall, and you shall go out in it. To their eyes, you will carry on your shoulder, in darkness you will bring out. Panecha techase, your face you will cover, v'lo sireh es ha'aretz, you will not see the land, ki mofes nesaticha leveis Yisrael, for a sign or a symbol I have made you for the house of Yisrael. V'aras kena, I did this, Yechezkel reports that he followed Hashem's words, kasher tzuvesi, as I was commanded, keili, keilai hotzesi, my utensils I took out, kichle gola yomam, like the utensils of exile during the day, uva erev, and at night, chasarti li vakir biyad, I dug into the wall with my hands, ba'alata, in darkness, hotseisi al kasef nasasi, I went out, I carried on my shoulder, le'inehem, to their eyes. Let's pause here. The seven psukim. Let's pause here. What is the focus of Yechezkel over here? If you're going to pick one word or phrase that seems to be repeated, eyes. Sight, to their eyes. Everything is to their eyes. They will see, they won't see, you won't see. The power of sight seems to be emphasized here by Yechezkel. And if you were to pick a secondary phrase besides the power of sight, Golus, what's that? And rebellion. Okay, rebellion, exile, and the power of sight. Okay, let's go back. Let's read it again and pick out some important points. Hashem tells Yechezkel, you are sitting besoch beis hameri, amongst the house of rebellion. Meaning, the Bnei Yisrael who are rebellious, you are among them. They have eyes to see, but don't see. The way it says in Pasuk Beis, Ashreinayim lohem liros, they have eyes to see, v'lo ro, but they didn't see. Aznayim lohem lishmoa, they have ears to hear, v'lo shameu, and they don't hear. Kibes merihem, for they are a house of rebellion. If you were to think of a similar phrase that we are all familiar with, Hallel. What does it say in Hallel? And what is it talking about? Avodah Zarah. It's talking about the idols. It's talking about inanimate objects that people worship. They have eyes but don't see, they have ears but don't hear, they have a mouth but don't talk, etc., etc., etc. It's inescapable that this is similar and therefore conjures up that image in our minds. What is the one difference? There is one difference. between the way it says it here and the way it says it there. The phrase Asher Inayim Lahem Liros V'lo Ro'u Aznayim Lahem Lishmo V'lo Shameyu. Well, it only mentions two here instead of six. That's true. Over there it mentions six different parts of the body. Over there it says mouth, eyes, ears, nose, hands and feet. Here is only... Okay, good. There's an extra word added here in the phrase. Over there it says Einayim lahem v'lo yiru, aznayim lahem v'lo yishmo. They have eyes, they don't see. They have ears, they don't hear. Here it says Einayim lahem liros v'lo ro. They have eyes to see and don't see. Aznayim lahem yishmo. They have ears to hear, v'lo shameyu and don't hear. The idols' eyes and ears are not to hear or to see. They have them to give them an image, but they were never made to be able to be used because they're inanimate. But these people, the Bnei Yisrael, have eyes to see and ears to hear, and they don't. Which is worse? Okay, so the person is worse because the person is able to and doesn't. Okay, doesn't use them the right way. On the other hand, why would this be better than over there? Because they could. Which means they are, and they are therefore correctable. That's right. They're correctable. If someone has them like an idol, and the idol can't possibly hear or see, there's nothing to correct over there. It is simply wrong. Here, although they are not using their eyes and their ears correctly, but they are correctable. So that's a crucial point. Now, why Yechezkel brings up eyes and ears, seeing and hearing, but then focuses only on sight, I don't know the answer to that. But clearly, the theme of these first seven psukim is the importance of using one's sight correctly, one's ability to see correctly. Everything is focused on that. He begins in Pasuk Beis telling us they have eyes to see but don't see. And then in the subsequent psukim, everything is about sight. He uses the word le'enehem in front of them. Let's count how many times. In Pasuk Gimel it says it twice. In Pasuk Dalet it says it twice. In Pasuk He it says it once. In Pasuk Vav it says it once. Six times it says le'enehem, and Pasuk Zayin it says it once. Seven times it says the word le'enehem to their eyes, in front of them. So that is the main focus of these psukim. Now, when I asked what else is being stressed, so the other answers were Golus, going into exile, and the house of rebellion. Now, if the sense of sight is what is being stressed, then what is being said over here is that this rebellious house is happening primarily because of the lack of using the sense of sight correctly. And what Yechezkel has to do is cause them to use it correctly. There's clearly here meant to be a parallel or a correlation, I should say, between the sense of sight and the Beis Meri, these people of rebellion and going into Golus. So let's understand what is happening. What does it mean, utensils of Golus, of exile? And this is based on a Chazal, on what our sages say in Megillas Eicha, which we read on Tisha B'Av. There's a pasuk in Tisha B'Av that says Vayagres Vechatzatz Shinav, which means they will. Vayagres means like to grit, to grind. Bechatzatz in pebbles, shinav, his teeth. His teeth will grind in pebbles. Imagine eating bread where there are little tiny pebbles in the bread. You don't see them. The person bites into the bread, they're going to crack their teeth. They're going to grind or grit their teeth on these pieces, these little pebbles that are in the bread. Rashi over there tells us, based on Chazal, that before they went into Golus, Yechezkel told them, and Yirmiyahu told them, make for yourself clay gola, simlecha clay gola, make for yourself utensils of Golus. What are utensils of Golus? People are living in their homes, they're living in their cities. The enemy comes and sacks the city, takes all the people, and drags them in chains into exile, which means takes them away from their homes, away from their cities, away from their country, and marches them off to a foreign country. When they are going, do they have time to pack a bag? Do they have time to take all their belongings? Is there a truck to pack with all their things? Of course not. They may be able to grab a few things before they're rushed out of the house. And they're out. They're gone. When that happens, chas v'shalom, so the people end up with nothing. They have the clothes on their back, perhaps a few items they were able to grab before they leave, but they have nothing else. If a person knew that they were going to go into Golus, they would prepare for themselves utensils that would be essential. The only things that one could take with them would be the most essential items. And that would be what they would grab on their way out of the house. The items that they would absolutely need, because where they're going, they're not going to have a chance to get more. So they're not going to grab the pictures off the wall, which may be nice to have pictures on the wall, but a person's not going to think about that when they're running off into Golus, when they're being dragged off into Golus. They're not going to grab their toaster oven, which would be a nice thing to have, but they're not going to take it with them because they know they're not going to be able to use it wherever they go. What they're going to do is grab something which is essential, which they need. And what is that going to be? That's going to be, well, they'll take some food and drink if they can, but that's temporary. They're going to have to find a way of getting food and drink elsewhere. You can't take enough food and drink because who knows how long they're going to be gone. But the utensils they're going to take, they'll take a spoon, something that they can use, a spoon, just one spoon. The concept of hygiene is, of course, going to be forgotten. They'll just use a spoon for whenever they can. And they'll need, it is essential, to have a small bowl. A bowl. Why a bowl? Because think about it. How can you do anything for food, to prepare any kind of food, without some container? Some bowl. And make for yourselves, means make for yourself a small bowl. People who are used to having large bowls, large pots and pans, that's not going with them into Golus. If they're going into Golus, they need a small bowl, a little tiny thing they can take with them. Why? So that they can prepare food and the food can remain clean. They didn't listen. And they went into Golus without these essential utensils. And the only way they had to bake bread, even when they were able to get their hands on some wheat, was to dig a hole in the ground and use that as a way to keep the dough in place and bake it over there in the ground. But unfortunately, when that happens, little pebbles get into the dough. And that's what the pasuk means in Eicha, when it says, "Vayagreis bechatzatz shinav," that their teeth became cracked and grated by biting into the chatzatz, these small pebbles that got into the food. Yechezkel here is being told to make for himself clay gola, make for himself these utensils of exile, and then go into exile for a few days in front of the Jewish people. He should act out going into Golus. As a clear foreshadowing of what was going to happen, he should pretend he is now headed for Golus. He's supposed to go during the day, in front of them, go from one place to another, in front of them, maybe they'll see, the Pasuk says in Pasuk Gimel, Ula Yiru, maybe they'll see. Ki Beis Mari Hema, as Rashi says, since they are rebellious, it's only Ulai Yiru, maybe they will see. If they weren't rebellious, then we know for a fact that they would see. But because they are rebellious, it's Ulai, maybe they will see. Because they are a Beis Mari, they are a house of rebellion. He says, bring out your utensils to their eyes. And then in Pasuk Dalid, you'll go out at night to their eyes, like those going out into Golus. To their eyes, dig for yourself in the wall, and you will go out that way. What does that imply? To dig through a wall and go out that way?
Shame.
Shame? Okay, it definitely connotes shame. What else?
Escape.
Good. It connotes escape. To dig through a wall, to not go out the regular way, it connotes some form of escape. And as the next pasuk says, pasuk vav, leinehem, to their eyes, al kasef tisa, you will carry on your shoulder, when you carry your utensils on your shoulder, bo'ala tatotsi, you will go out in darkness. Panecha techasei, you'll cover your face, lo sira es haaretz, you won't see the land, ki mofeis nesaticha leveis Yisrael, because I made you a sign for the base Yisrael. So I told you already last week that, because there was a reference last week, but I'll tell you the full story this time. I don't think I told you the whole thing last time. That this is a reference to when Tzidkiyahu will go into Golus. There's another pasuk later, we're just going to bring this up. Let me just make sure. Yeah, I'm going to wait for till we get there to tell you about that part of the story. But there's going to be a reference here to Tzidkiyahu, to the king. So we'll get to that in a moment. So dig into the wall, which connotes some form of escape. And it'll be at night, like people trying to escape in the middle of the night. And then Yechezkel reports that he does this in Pasuk Zayin, Va'asken, I did this like I was told, like I was commanded, and he did what Hashem said. He went out in the day with his utensils, he dug in the wall at night, and he carried things on his shoulders in front of their eyes. Now, how are we to understand this reference to eyesight and to seeing? It seems clear that it is the lack of using their eyesight properly that makes them go into Golus. Either their being rebellious causes them not to use their eyesight properly, or they don't use their eyesight properly, which causes them to be rebellious, one or the other, maybe both. And that causes them to go into Golus. And Yechezkel is to show them in front of their eyes what it means to go into Golus. So my question is, I'm going to say this a little bit more clearly, and then I'm going to ask the question. The Yechezkel is being told they're not using their eyesight, so we're going to make a very, very clear sign right in front of their eyes because they haven't been using their eyesight. So now Yechezkel, you go out and clearly show them right in front of their eyes a thing they can't miss about going into Golus. And then maybe they'll get the point. So my question is, what were they not getting until now? What were they seeing until now that they weren't understanding? Because that's what Hashem is saying. They're not using their eyesight. He hasn't done this yet. He hasn't shown them. He hasn't played out going into Golus. So that's not what they're not seeing. There's something else that they're not seeing. So what is it that they're not seeing? And why is it so important to underscore this sense of sight? Yeah. Okay, they didn't see the Shekhinah leaving. We don't know that that was available for everybody to see. Yechezkel saw. We don't know if it was available for everybody. Okay, they didn't see their behavior causing Golus. Okay. What is there not to see? Meaning, people aren't behaving properly. Okay, so they didn't see evil behavior. They didn't think it was so bad. Okay. Would that have necessarily made them think of Golus?
They didn't have the compassion of each other. They failed to see the kindness of them.
Okay, so they failed to see the suffering of their brothers and be compassionate. Okay.
They never thought they'd ever have to leave Eretz Yisrael.
Okay, they never thought they'd have to leave. It's true.
Like they couldn't, like it wasn't a reality for them.
That's true. That's for sure true. But there's something which he mentioned last week, really, that they're not seeing. Remember, they misinterpreted something. Hashem sent a clear sign that Golus is going to happen, and they interpreted it completely in the reverse from what Hashem wanted them to understand. Remember, Hashem said about those who are still in Yerushalayim, that those who are in Yerushalayim are saying about the ones who left. We see a nodding. Go ahead. You don't remember. Okay, okay. That, yeah, go ahead.
They felt it wasn't them, it was the people who left.
Okay.
They were okay, they were good people.
11 years before the destruction, Hashem brings a galus, Yechaniah, where the leadership is taken into galus, taken into exile. Before that, years before that, the 10 tribes are taken into exile. And the people left in Yerushalayim were supposed to get the message that, look, we are also in danger of going into galus. The best have been taken into galus. If we don't shape up, we're next. And instead, they said, look, we were spared the first time, then we'll likely be spared the second time. Then won't be a second time. We're safe. If Hashem wanted us in galus, He would have taken us out the first time. And He didn't. So they interpreted their remaining in Yerushalayim not as a temporary stay, not as a chance to do teshuvah to avoid the ultimate destruction, but rather they viewed it as Hashem's not going to take us. The leadership being taken into galus, they were mechaper, they atoned for everybody. We're safe the way we are. But of course, that's not what the message Hashem wanted them to get. They had eyes to see, but didn't see. Rosh Hashiva of Weinberg, Zechon Baruch of blessed memory, used to say that he used to talk about history, the study of history. He said, people think that history is something which, as long as you get your facts straight and you can make things up, you can make assumptions. But as long as you have the facts that are true, there's not much you can do wrong with history. There are facts. In the year 1492, Columbus sailed for America. There are facts. And as long as you state the facts, then everything is true. And he used to argue that it's just the opposite. History is the most false study that one could do. Because you can't simply state facts. Because whenever you study history, what you're doing is explaining cause and effect. You say one thing leads to this thing, which leads to this thing, which leads to this thing. Everything is meant to be a cause and effect. When you draw a picture of history and you explain how things work, everything is a cause and an effect. This led to that, which led to that, which led to that. If you're not looking through a Torah lens, then you are inevitably going to make a mistake about what is a cause and what is an effect, or what is a cause of what and what is an effect from what, necessarily. He brought Psukim in Sefer Yirmiyahu, where after the destruction, Yirmiyahu says to some of the people that, look what happened. I mean, for years, he's been saying, you've got to do teshuva. If you don't do teshuva, there's going to be a terrible destruction. You got to do teshuva. You got to do teshuva. You got to do teshuva. And they kept saying, no, 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 it's not going to happen. And he says to them, after it happens, I've been telling you the whole time. You had to do teshuva. And they say back to Yirmiyahu, no, Yirmiyahu, you're wrong. It wasn't our fault. It wasn't because of our avers. It was your fault that we went into galus. It had nothing to do with us. We were good. They totally turned on its head that which the message they were supposed to get. We're not learning Yirmiyahu, so I can't go through the psukim with you to show you that example. But this was, he used to quote those psukim in Yirmiyahu to show that history is the most misleading he didn't use the word science, but it's the most misleading of studies. Because when you don't know what is the cause and what is the effect, then it's impossible to know. Now, he did go out on a limb and make one suggestion. He made one suggestion. He said, and I will say it to you, and I'll say it to whoever's listening on the tape, that he doesn't know this is true. He's not a Navi. He's not a prophet. But it might be true. He was just trying to give an example, a possibility. So, I realize that I'm saying it again, but I don't want anybody to walk out of here and say that Rabbi Weinberg said this. He said this as a possibility. We know that the Jews in Europe were slaughtered in World War II by the Nazis, Yimach Shemah. We know that before World War II, the Gedolim, the great sages of Europe, discouraged people from leaving. And they said, don't go. People who could have left and come to America, they say, don't go to America, it's the Treif of Medina, it's the Treif country, don't go there. And they asked people to stay, and many people stayed because that's what the Gedolim said to do. Only to be destroyed, only to be murdered, they and their entire families, a few years later. So, Rabbi Weinberg said, the historians will say that the Jews of Europe listened to their sages and stayed in Europe, and as a result, they were killed. The cause is that they stayed. The result is that they were killed. Rabbi Weinberg said, who says, maybe these are the facts. He doesn't know. He said, I'm not a Navi, I'm not a prophet. Maybe these are the facts. Perhaps if the Jews would have left Europe in droves, perhaps they would have made it, many of them, to Eretz Yisrael, to what was called at the time Palestine. Maybe that's where they would have ended up. Maybe had that happened, then Hitler, Yimach Shemo, would have focused his efforts on conquering Palestine, which he never got during World War II, and then would have slaughtered everybody there, including those who had already been there before World War II, from the 1800s. And then there never would be any yishuv, any settlement in Israel from which the state of Israel was then born. Maybe because the Gedolim, because the sages told the Jews of Europe to stay in Europe, then that meant that it spared the Jews who were already in Israel, which then gave rise after World War II to the state of Israel. Maybe. We don't know because we're not Nevi'im, we're not prophets. We don't know what is the cause and what is the effect. But to simply accept cause and effect is making a mistake. And therefore history is without the lens of Torah, is going to be flawed no matter what. Because we don't know what causes what. We have no idea. We can make suggestions, but we don't know for sure. Without a prophet, without a Navi, we don't know for sure. Yechezkel here is being told the people are seeing, but they're not seeing. They have eyes to see, but they're not seeing. Here, the great ones were taken into Golas already. 11 years earlier, from this story, it's only 5 or 6 years earlier. They're just 5 or 6 years ago. And instead of interpreting it as a warning for themselves, they've interpreted it as a safety for themselves. So Hashem says to Yechezkel, they're not using their sense of sight properly. You're going to have to give them a much more direct warning, something they can't possibly misinterpret, unless they really try. Because if you want to misinterpret something, you can misinterpret anything. A person can believe whatever they want to believe. With the fact staring them in the face, they can misinterpret. And so, here, he has him act out, going into Golus, so that the people will see clearly what is in store for them. Yechezkel does this, le'enehem, 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 to their eyes, to their eyes, to their eyes, right in front of them, so that they will see what is going on. Now, it is true though, maybe Ms. Conover is going to ask this, go ahead.
Well, now, I'm confused, because in reading this, it looked to me like he was now talking to the people
right.
In the Bible.
That's right. That's right. You're right. That's what I thought you were going to say. Good. Excellent.
Okay.
Right.
Because it sounded like you were...
Right. No, that was my next point. Which, no, you're right. 100%. 100%. He's not doing this in Israel.
Right.
Right. So this is what we mentioned last week. He's doing it in front of the people in Bavel so that they will send word back to Eretz Yisrael so that the people in Eretz Yisrael will get the message. Now, you could argue, wouldn't it be more effective in Eretz Yisrael? So we talked about this a little bit last week. I imagine that it was more effective in Bavel, because the people in Bavel were more likely to get the message correctly, and then send dire warning to their relatives who are still in Eretz Yisrael. be that as it may, it could be that there was no possibility of doing an Eretz Yisrael because there was no Navi in Eretz Yisrael. The Navi was in Babel. And so it could be that it just was the only option available. But whatever it is, Hashem is telling Yechezkel, this is the way to get them the message. And it'll be much more clear than the first message. Any other questions? Okay, let's move on in the parak. Pasuk Ches, verse 8. And the word of Hashem came to me in the morning, saying, after he had acted out going into Golas, Ben Adam, son of man, Halo Amru Elecha, Beis Yisrael, Beis Hameri, the people of Yisrael, the house of rebellion, have said to you, what are you doing? You've piqued their interest. They're asking what you're doing. And Mor Aleim say to them, Ko Amar Hashem Elokim, so says Hashem God, Hanasi, the king, the prince, the king, the leader. This nevuah, this prophecy, is directed at the king. Hamasa hazeh b'Yerushalayim. This masa here means this prophecy. Masa sometimes means, it usually means a burden. Here it means a prophecy. This prophecy in Yerushalayim is directed at the king. The chol beis Yisrael asher hem b'socham, and all the Jews that are there in Yerushalayim. Emor say, ani mofeschem, I am your symbol. Says Yechezkel. Hashem says to Yechezkel, say to them, I, Yechezkel, am your symbol. Kasha Sisi, as I did, Kain Yeyaseh Lahem, so will be done to them. Bagola Bashvi Yeleichu, in exile, in captivity, they will go. Vehanasi Asher B'Socham, and the king that is amongst them. El Kaseif Yisa, he will carry on his shoulder. The king never carries anything. He never carries a burden. He will carry on his shoulder into Golas. Ba'alata, in darkness, the Yetzain, he'll go out. Bakir Yachduru, in the wall, they will dig Lahotzi Vo, to go out in it. Panav Yechaseh, he will cover his face. Yana Sherlo Yire La'ayin Hu Es Ha'aretz, in order that he will not look with his eyes to the land. He won't be able to see the land. He'll be covered his face, as Yechezkel himself did. Ufarasti es rishti olav, and I will spread my net on him. V'nispas b'mtsudasi, and he will be caught in my trap. V'hevesi oso bavela, and I will bring him to Bavel, Eretz Kastim, to the land of Kastim. V'osa lo yireh, but that it he will not see. I will bring him to Bavel, but he won't see it. V'sham yamus, and there he will die. What does that mean? I'll bring him to Bavel, but he won't see it, and there he'll die. V'chol ashes v'osav ezro, and all that are around him, his helpers, his entourage. V'chol agapav, and all of his, agapav literally means his wings, but here it means the people around him, his entourage. Ezarel v'chol ruach, I will scatter it in all directions. V'cheref arik achareyem, and the sword I will send after them. V'yod'u ki ani Hashem, and they will know that I am Hashem. Ba'fitzio samba goyim, as I scatter them amongst the nations. Ve'zevisio samba aratzos, and also another word for scatter them amongst the lands. Vahusarti mehem anshe mispor, I will leave over from them a men of number, which means a small amount. Mecherev, meirav, midaver, from the sword, from the famine, and from pestilence. Leman yisapu es kol to'avosehem, in order that they will tell over all of their abominations, Dagoyim Asher Ba'usham, amongst the nations that they come there, V'yodu, and they will know, Ki Ani Hashem, that I am God. So I will leave some alive, that they can, V'matzik Aleim Asadim, they can accept the judgment upon themselves, and understand that what Hashem did was just. Tzidkiyahu, the king, he's a puppet king. He was installed by Nebuchadnezzar, when he took the king Yechaniah into Golus. Zedekiah was of royal blood, but he was a puppet king placed there for the 11 years between the first and second Golas. Nebuchadnezzar makes Zedekiah take an oath that he will obey and remain faithful to Nebuchadnezzar. In the end, Tzidkiyahu does not keep his oath. And that's when Nebuchadnezzar comes. And this time he sacks Yerushalayim for the final time. And destroys it and burns down the Beis HaMikdash. Tzidkiyahu lived in the palace. The palace was next door to the Beis HaMikdash. In Yerushalayim you had the Beis HaMikdash, the temple. You had, I've mentioned this in other classes, in Yerushalayim you had the Beis HaMikdash. On the Beis HaMikdash grounds on the campus of the Beis HaMikdash, you had the Lishkas HaGazis, which is where the Sanhedrin sat, the high court sat. And immediately next door, you had the palace. Which means you had all three ksarim, all three crowns of the Jewish people located in the same place. You had the Beis HaMikdash, which is the Kohen Gadol, the Ketzer Kahuna, the crown of Kahuna. You had the Lishkas HaGazis, the Sanhedrin, which was the Ketzer Torah, the crown of Torah. That's where the greatest sages were in the country, in the world. And next door you had the palace, which was the Ketzer Malchus. That was the crown of royalty. When you went to the Oyla Regel, when you went to visit Yerushalayim on Pesach, Sukkot, and Shavuos, it wasn't just going to the Beis HaMikdash. It was an incredible event in one's life. Because you went, and you could literally bump into the greatest of the great in Klal Yisrael. The Kohen Gadol was there, the king was there, the Gadol Hador, the greatest sage of the generation was there, everybody, anybody who was anybody was there. Even if you weren't going during Yontif, if you would go any time of the year, go to Yerushalayim, go to the Beis HaMikdash, you would be in the presence, in the area, of all of the great ones in Klal Yisrael. It's an unbelievable thing. That's one of the things that I think about on Tisha B'Av, when you think about what we're lacking, what we don't have. Imagine that ability. You know, it's nice enough we have the ability to go to Eretz Yisrael, something that our ancestors couldn't do. But here, to be able to go and see all the great ones at one time, and be able to interact, it's an incredible thing. That was the opportunity that people had in the time there was a Beis HaMikdash. The palace was next door to the Beis HaMikdash. Tzidkio had formed for himself a tunnel, an escape route, out of his palace, which went, I guess it was underground, and it came out at Yericho, at Jericho. That's where the escape route led. And from there, he'd be able to escape elsewhere. And when Nebuchadnezzar came in with his forces, Tzidkiyahu escaped in that tunnel, which is being foreshadowed by Yechezkel when he says about digging into the wall. An escape route. And nobody found it. And he was safe. And he would have gotten away. But Hashem says, I will spread my net and catch him. And he will be caught in my trap. What does that mean? What Hashem did is the armies of Nebuchadnezzar were roaming the countryside. And Hashem brought a deer. And the deer ran in front of them. Well, they're soldiers. And they were hungry. And there's a deer. So they chased the deer to hunt the deer. They'll kill the deer and eat it. And they chased the deer. And the deer kept eluding them. And it kept running. And they kept running after the deer. And the deer crossed by the exit of Tzidkiyahu's escape route, just as Tzidkiyahu was emerging from the route. As he was coming out of the cave, the deer ran running by with the soldiers in hot pursuit. And they came and saw Tzidkiyahu right there for the taking. And so Hashem made Tzidkiyahu get caught. Tzidkiyahu would have gotten out, but Hashem didn't want him to get out. And if Hashem doesn't want it to happen, it's not going to happen. He didn't make an ace. He didn't make a miracle. He made events work the way he wanted them to work and brought a deer and had the soldiers chase the deer and eventually catch Tzidkiyahu. They caught him. They brought him to Nebuchadnezzar, who was on the border of Eretz Yisrael, I believe, in Rivla. And there Nebuchadnezzar held court to prosecute Tzidkiyahu for having violated the Shvu, having violated the oath. And when he was found guilty, he did two things. First, he slaughtered all of Tzidkiyahu's sons in front of his eyes. So he would see his line would end. There would be no dynasty of Tzidkiyahu. Then, after he saw his sons being slaughtered, Nebuchadnezzar gouged out his eyes. Blinded him. The last thing Tzidkiyahu saw were his own sons being killed. And then he took Tzidkiyahu into Galus, into exile. And that's what the pasuk means over here. That I will bring him to Bavel, in pasuk Yud Gimel 13, I will bring him to Bavel, the land of the Kastim, v'osa lo yireh, but he won't see it. Why not? Because he won't be able to. He will have been blinded. Vesham Yamus, and there he will die. It is not coincidental that the focus that he's been emphasizing here is the ability to see, and we're going to show them a clear foreshadowing of the events that are going to happen, and then in the end, Tzidkiyahu is punished by being blinded, by seeing his sons killed, and then being blinded. That is because after all of this, the Jews in Eretz Yisrael, led by Tzidkiyahu, still did not see. And a punishment for being given such a clear vision, such a clear sight of what is going to happen, and ignoring it, then Hashem says to Tzidkiyahu, you didn't use your sight the way you could have. You didn't use it, and therefore you will lose it. And that was the punishment to Tzidkiyahu, representing all of Bnei Yisrael left in Yerushalayim, for misusing and not using the sense of sight after being given such a clear picture of what would happen to them if they did not do Teshuvah. Incidentally, of course, the line does continue, not through Tzidkiyahu, but through Yechaniah, it does continue, the line of Malchus Beis David, of the Davidic line does continue, and of course Mashiach, may he come speedily in our days, comes from the Davidic line, from Malchus Beis David. That's where it's from. Although Tzidkiyahu saw his own line being destroyed, but the line does continue, and of course we are waiting for Mashiach to come. This is a frightening, it's really a very frightening part of Yechezkel. Such a clear midah k'neged midah, measure for measure, the punishment that was meted out to him for what happened. It's a frightening part of it. But if we're learning it, we do have to take it to heart. And when we are given clear signs of things, we have to respond, and we have to do what Hashem expects us to do. We're not Nevi'im, we're not prophets, and we can't start taking guesses, why is this, why is that. We don't know things, we can make all kinds of conjecture, we can do it, but we don't really know. But sometimes we are given clear messages. And when we get those messages, we have to respond. We have to do something about it. The Rambam writes, an unbelievable thing, the Rambam writes that if there are tsaros, if bad things are happening, and a person doesn't react. If bad things are happening, this tzara, that tzara, of course we're supposed to do teshuva. And a person doesn't react. He just ignores it. What would you call that person? What would I call that person? He's apathetic. He's in denial. Right? Those are the words we would use. The Rambam's word is, he is cool. Cool. He's an achzar. He's cruel. What a strange word to use. I would think of someone who's cruel if he's beating somebody up. Somebody who's cruel is someone who passes by a person who's in terrible need of help and just ignores the person. That's cruel. Cruel is he does some terrible act. Cruel is because he doesn't react to it, Sarah. So again, Rabbi Weinberg Zaharachi used to say on this Rambam that he's cruel. Because we know that if we don't react to what we see, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu is forced to punish. The purpose of getting a warning is that Hashem shouldn't punish us. And if a person ignores it, he's cruel. He's cruel to the rest of Klal Yisrael, because there will be punishment meted out. And he's cruel to himself, because he will get the punishment as well. It's a cruelty, it's an achzarias, not to react, to ignore when there are clear messages. I'm not speaking to you now because of a specific thing that I mean to bring up. I don't have anything particular in mind. But this is an approach to life. It's something which we really have to have in our minds, that when things happen, we are expected to react. That's why Hashem does things. He makes things happen so that we will react. And if we ignore, then unfortunately, as like Rarolovsky said on Sunday, if we don't react after he taps us on the shoulder, then he's forced to tap us on the shoulder a little harder. And he doesn't want to do it, and we don't want him to do it either. And it's a cruelty to not react. And that's really what the point Yechezkel is making over here. We have a few more minutes. We're not going to finish. No. Let's go a few more psukim. Yud Zayin 17. Vahidvar Hashem Eilai Leimar, the word of Hashem was to me saying, Ben Adam, son of man, lach mecha birash tochel. Your bread you should eat. Now rash is usually translated as in noise. But the literal translation of rash doesn't mean noise, it means trembling. You should eat your bread with trembling. Umimecha biragza umidaga tishte. And your water with, another word for trembling, shivering, and worry, you should drink. In other words, in front of the Jewish people, eat your bread, drink your water, in fear, with trembling. V'amar tal amarz, you should say to the people of the land, Ko amar Hashem Elokim, so says Hashem God, Yoshvi Yushalayim, to the people who dwell in Yushalayim, al Admas Yisrael, to those who are on the land of Yisrael. Lachmam bid'aga yochelu, their bread they will eat in worry, in fear. Umeimehem bishimamon, and their water with destruction, yishtu, they will drink. Leman teisham artsa mimaloa, so that their land will be destroyed from its fullness. Mechamas kolayosh vimba, from the theft of all who live there. We talked about Hamas a few classes ago, about the Hamas being the main sin is theft. V'harim anos shavos tacharavna, and the cities that are settled will be destroyed. V'haaretz shemamatia, and the land will be desolate. V'idatem ki ani Hashem, and you will know that I am God. The reference here is, of course, that he should eat and drink with fear, because people who are being taken into Gullus, they are afraid that they will have nothing to eat or to drink, and so they're eating and drinking quickly just to make sure to get it in before chas v'shalom they lose their food and their drink. Vahidvar Hashem Eilai Leimar, and the word of Hashem was to me saying, Ben Adam, son of man, Ma Mashol Hazel Lachem Al Admas Yisrael Leimar. Alright, I changed my mind. This is where we'll start. I just wanted to find a good place to start. We're not going to get to the end of the parak. Chaf Aleph 21 is a good place to start for next week. So I'd like to stop here, and we'll pick it up, Mitzvah Hashem, next week from Pasuk Chaf Aleph, verse 21. It is going to get better. I know this is all negative. We have to get both lessons. Negative lessons, we don't like to think about it, but we need that as well. And it will get better. It's going to take a little while, but we will get there. We will get there. Believe it. Yeah. It does not seem that the Chorban could have been avoided after a certain point. Maybe yes, but it seems like that was very unlikely, but still things could have been better. And anyway, as we've shown, even Yechezkel himself makes it better by his reaction to what he sees. Mm-hmm.